No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio, and I am your host, Jess Root, joining you on a Tuesday night. If it is that you, in fact, are listening to us live, we are on Blog Talk Radio and Revenge of the Birds, Facebook, Twitter, however you want to do it. Thank you for listening. If you're listening to us live, today is our NFL draft defensive preview about the Arizona Cardinals. Again, if you are listening live, thank you. I thank you. I guess I've done a lot of thank you. Yes. If you're listening via download, no, you won't be able to call in today, but appreciate that as well. And if you are listening via download, whether it be through Blog Talk Radio directly, you can find Revenge of the Birds Radio on iTunes, on Stitcher Radio. You can subscribe, and you could, if you're a fan already of the site of RevengeOfTheBirds.com, our SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, go ahead and head over there. You can catch all of our episodes as well on that site, and a ton of Arizona Cardinals coverage that I happen to write most of, and have another bunch of talented writers, including Seth Cox, who joins me momentarily on the Revenge of the Birds Radio show, talking Arizona Cardinals and NFL draft. But before we do so, let's start out with the Cardinals headlines. What has been going on over the last couple of weeks? We last talked to you 2 weeks ago, and we previewed the NFL draft on offense. There hasn't been a lot going on other than NFL draft rumors. No changes on the roster for the Cardinals other than they have uniform numbers. And some of the uniform numbers, there's some changes that have happened. Deion Buchanan moves to number 20, what he wore in college. The new Arizona Cardinals players that they signed in free agency now have their numbers assigned. That includes Mike Iupati, number 76, as was expected. Corey Peters picks up number 98. Corey Redding picks up number 90, the number that was vacated by Darnell Dockett. A.Q. Shipley picks up number 53. Sean Weatherspoon, 55. Which was John Abraham's number, and Lamar Woodley will wear number 52, at least for now. There's nothing set in stone yet, because number changes can still happen as moves happen in training camp. People are cut, people are added. Those are things that are going to go on over the course of the offseason. In terms of NFL draft, there's all sorts of rumors going around. The latest is, well, Peter King says that the Cardinals are going to really, really think really hard about drafting a running back with the first round pick that they have at number 20. Perfectly okay. I don't know if I necessarily believe that. You have nothing in terms of the Adrian Peterson saga, other than Peter King said in an interview with Brad Sesmet here locally recently that he doesn't believe that that it'll fit when it comes to the money, things like that. Brett Hundley, quarterback out of UCLA, we talked about a couple of weeks ago. He was reportedly in the Valley today or sometime this week to visit with the Arizona Cardinals. The Cardinals brought in Randy Gregory, pass rusher from Nebraska. He's kind of seen his draft stock fall a bit between his frame and then some off the field issue, mainly the drug issues. He had positive tests while he was in college. He failed the drug test at the combine, and so it's very possible that, I mean, there was some talk that he could fall all the way to number 24, and so the Cardinals are doing their due diligence if he's going to be a player that they would like. Should he actually fall that far? I hate to even call it a rumor because it was a Twitter account, NFL Draft Bite. I don't know that I don't know if it's any sort of legit, but there was a rumor saying that they had called the Texans, that the Cardinals had called the Houston Texans to inquire about trading up. Should their player, being the Cardinal, the player the Arizona Cardinals are targeting, should he fall to number 16? I wrote a piece on that about, well, what could be pass rusher, cornerback, whoever they might be. But other than that, there isn't much in the way of news. The mock drafts that are out there right now, as tracked on ArizonaSports.com, they track all of the kind of the well-known mocks, mock drafters. We get NFL.com, Yahoo, CBS Sports, all those guys that not at SB Nation's Dan Kadar as well. And roughly two-thirds of them have the Cardinals picking a running back. A lot of them have Todd Gurley mocked the Cardinals, others Melvin Gordon. There's all sorts of different ways. We've had a couple of mock drafts come out recently. I ran a simulation using FanSpeak in which I ran all seven rounds. In that one, I had the Cardinals going early on with the pass rusher out of the edge player out of UCLA, Oamagbe Odigizua. Yee, that name. Yes, I hope I got it right. Picking up P.J. Williams in the second round, the cornerback out of Florida State, with a little bit off the field stuff. Not picking a running back until round three, Northern Iowa's Johnson. Always, you can head over to RevengeOfTheBirds.com. You can check out the content that we've got over there. Mock drafts, some speculation, some analysis, all sorts of things. Anything that the Arizona Cardinal fan could possibly want. So we're going to go ahead and talk tonight. We're going to talk NFL draft. We're going to talk defense. And it's time to bring Seth Cox on the line as he's finally joined me tonight. Seth, good evening, and how are you?
Good, Jess. How are you?
I'm doing great as we're now getting really close to the NFL draft. When is the real thing's going to happen? I think we've reached the point. I think we've kind of reached that point now where fans are sort of done with speculation. They're kind of tired of it. It was around, if I recall, as of 2 years ago, it was around this time, middle of April, when the NFL was doing their drafts. Last year, pushed it into May. This year, the end of April. Are you there yet, or is it just the feeling I'm getting from some of the community that everyone's really kind of done talking about the draft and really just ready to have the draft happen?
You know, it's partially that. It's like you said, it's a lot of speculation right now, so people aren't using the extra time the way they should, and that's, you know, to dig a little deeper on guys, you know, guys like Preston Smith, who you and I will talk about later, and we like, and trying to figure out, you know, if Preston Smith's the guy that, you know, the Cardinals can use, trying to figure out things like Brett Hundley, is he on the table, and, you know, if so, how does he fit in the Arians offense? You know, there's a lot that can still be done right now. And I think part of the issue is that people get too involved with the speculative side of the draft process and lose focus on, you know, the actual process itself, which is learning about the players and finding more information out and stuff like that. So it does tend to run long. It causes, especially, you know, in the internet draft community, it causes a lot of friction. And this time of year, people tend to be very sensitive and, you know, kind of trying to justify moving somebody or not moving somebody, you know, just weird stuff that, like you said, usually about this time, we're either 2 days or, you know, 9 days away from the draft getting started. So being, what, two or, you know, 16 days or whatever it is, it is a little bit longer.
Thank you.
Jesse there. All right, I'm not sure what happened to Jess, if he's still on or if I'm gone. I'm not sure what happened. So if he comes back on, he can cut me off and we'll get back to the plan. The first part we were going to talk about, and we were going to get into, you know, just the defensive positions. Obviously, within the Cardinals right now, they've made a lot of moves on the defensive side of the ball. We talked about that, I want to say, two shows ago. And then talked about the moves and how those worked. And one of the things that you always look at in the draft, and something that's been talked about quite a bit, is, you know, where are the Cardinals going to go with that pick 24? How's that going to go? I've seen recently with Matt Miller of Bleacher Report, and then I can't remember who mocked it the other day, but I've seen Eddie Goldman and Eric Armstead of Oregon mocked to the Cardinals quite a bit recently. Obviously, nose tackle, Eddie Goldman, and then, you know, 3-4 defensive end, Eric Armstead. And those are interesting positional mocks, because if you look at what the Cardinals did in the offseason, those kind of coincide with positions that they addressed in the offseason. Obviously, Corey Peters, the nose tackle, and Corey Redding is the defensive end in that 34 defense. So adding a player like Goldman or Armstead can seem redundant. And this is something I talked about with listener and good friend Casey Brackley the other night. And one of my opinions on this subject was, you can't look at the position in this draft because there are so many issues surrounding numerous positions in this draft that you have to just look at the player. And the player, you know, if he doubles up at a position, so say Eddie Goldman is the pick, the question isn't, you know, oh, well, they didn't get the best, you know, need pick for them / best player available at the position of need that they had. They doubled up on something they already had. The question is more, how will that player work into the rotation, and how will he impact the game and the Cardinals roster? When you look at the Cardinals roster right now at the nose tackle position, you have to be kind of happy with what they have in Corey Peters and Alameda Te'amu. But there's also the question of, can they do more? What more can they do at that position? Eddie Goldman is the type of prospect, you know, that is probably going to come in at nose tackle. So I think when you look at that position, the nose tackle position, that's a position just like defensive end. They've addressed it in free agency, but they could also address it in the draft, because you have players that have, or you have a draft where the positions of need for the Cardinals, outside linebacker and probably defensive back or cornerback more specifically, those could be positions that go a little bit earlier in the draft, and maybe you have a run on those positions. So while they're obviously needs, they're not necessarily going to be positions that you can address really easily, especially at that pick 24. When you look at, obviously, outside linebacker and inside linebacker, those are both positions that the Cardinals need, that you expect them to address in the draft. But it's one of those things where you look at last year's draft and it felt like they got good value at positions of need. Obviously, they needed a safety, they needed a tight end, they took a flyer on an athlete like Kareem Martin. They needed another wide receiver, definitely a speed wide receiver, so they got John Brown. And then, you know, day three is just players that you grab and hope that somebody turns out. And when you look at the way that set up, you can definitely make an argument that they didn't go best player available at any of those positions, but instead went for positions of need. And you can go back to the year before. They needed a guard badly. They needed help at the linebacker position badly. And they addressed both of those positions in the first two rounds. And it's similar to what you saw what you see a lot of times in these mock drafts, where people have questions, you know, about, oh, well, why would they address this position when, you know, they've addressed it in free agency? Well, one of the things that good teams do is stack talent. And one of the things good teams are able to do, I should say, is stack talent. So when you look at the defensive side of the ball and what they addressed in free agency, and you know, we talked about it, the defensive line, all three positions were addressed, the inside linebacker position, you have to say that those are still on the table. They're not necessarily going to go away at this point. Now, all that being said, if you look at all the positions on defense for the Cardinals, nose tackle, defensive end, outside linebacker, inside linebacker, corner, and safety, I think in the draft you're going to see the Cardinals try and address the outside linebacker position, probably get a flexible defensive end position where a guy that can maybe play outside linebacker and play defensive end. And then I think, barring a huge run, that you're going to see the cornerback position addressed. Safety and nose tackle, it may come, it may not, but I wouldn't be shocked in any way, shape, or form if any of those positions are addressed in the draft as well. You see a lot of these mock drafts, and that's, people get heated on mock drafts, and what they don't understand, and what Jess has alluded to before, is it's a practice of piecing together fits as you kind of go along the process, and you look at what the Cardinals have done in free agency, and you look at how at the position, you know, the 24th pick in the draft, who's going to be available. And it's interesting to note and interesting to watch how those positions fall off the board. You look at this draft, and a lot of, obviously every Cardinals fan at this point wants an edge rusher, and rightfully so. I mean, if you had to pinpoint the weakest spot on the Cardinals defense right now, assuming Darryl Washington comes back and is reinstated, I think everybody would agree it's the edge rushing position. It's not that they have bad outside linebackers. It's just that they don't have that typical edge rusher that's able to create pressure consistently. And I think when you look at it that way, you have to be excited about this edge class, because I try to do everything in tiers of players. And when you look at the tiers in this draft, I have them kind of in three different tiers, and I've posted my edge rankings on Revenge of the Birds, and so people, you know, have seen my thoughts on these guys already. And obviously, for me, the best pure edge player in this draft is Vic Beasley. You know, if I had to pick one player that the Cardinals could just get, you know, regardless of draft position, it's Vic Beasley. And when you look at, you know, kind of last year, my MO was the same with Khalil Mack. If the Cardinals could get one player at one position in the draft last year, it was Khalil Mack. And that was just the way I felt about that position last year. I thought he was a total package. Different type of player Vic Beasley is, but I have the same strong affinity for his ability to come off the edge and bring pressure. The other reason I like Vic Beasley to the Cardinals, and obviously there's a very low percentage chance that something like that happens. I have a hard time seeing Beasley fall past 8 if he falls past 3 to begin with. But you want a guy that can consistently bring pressure off the edge and free up Calais Campbell to have to be blocked one-on-one. You look at what the Cardinals have done before, and you see the way that Calais Campbell is double-teamed frequently, setting up an edge rusher to be one-on-one, and what ends up happening a lot of the times is that guy can't win one-on-one, or he does win because he ends up getting singled up on a running back or a tight end or, you know, something other than an offensive lineman. And, you know, the Cardinals have not had a player that can press that edge and win consistently since Bertrand Berry, maybe. And that was an older Bertrand Berry, so they haven't had a young threat for a while. The next guy that I like is at the edge position was Bud Dupree. And this is where the draft becomes interesting for a lot of people, because it becomes more about projection than productivity. Bud Dupree is more of an athlete right now than he is a football player. He has a lot of issues in terms of winning with technique, and that allows, you know, he does a really good job of winning with speed around the edge, but he doesn't win consistently having to use a counter move or a secondary move in order to beat a tackle in pass protection. So and Jess will be back in a second. He's still having some mic issues, so we appreciate you hanging on while I kind of yammer through this a little bit. When you look at Dupree and what he brings, you know, that's kind of one of the fun things about the draft, is all of a sudden now you're banking on production, or, you know, a player taking the next step as opposed to a player that's done it. And that would be Randy Gregory, my number three, and kind of the end of the tier one guys for me in that genre of edge rusher. You have Gregory, who's, you know, that linear, long, athletic edge rusher that a lot of teams covet. And, you know, I don't know if he can play with his hand in the dirt at all. He's going to be more of a pure 3-4 outside linebacker, but in the Cardinals defense, you know, we don't know what James Betcher is going to run, but in the previous iterations of their defense, they have that position available and as a need. So I think Gregory would kind of be the best chance to fall there because of his off the field issues with the weed and things of that nature. I can now, Jess.
Okay. I have no idea what happened. Only I have to do it back way. I'm sorry to kind of, you know, derail what you were talking about, but my microphone, which I've been using now for over a year, just stopped working. So I'm calling in with I'm getting feedback now because I'm calling in with my Google Mail, my Google, and now I'm listening to myself as I talk. So it's a little bit unnerving. So I apologize, everyone who is listening. This has kind of almost a sort of a habit over the on and off of the last few shows. So something goes wrong, and I apologize. But
I was getting a kick out of Seth talking. So he was talking pass rushers. I'm going to kind of stop that. Let's kind of bring it to just talk about positions, because we'll get back to the pass rusher. Let's talk about each individual position. Talk first about, do we think the Cardinals draft a guy? And then we're going to talk about each individual position. We'll lead that with the pass rushers. So let's, you talk about the nose tackle. So how likely do you think it's going to the Cardinals draft a tackle?
If they don't take like an Eddie Goldman or, I mean, don't take this the wrong way, but God forbid, Danny Shelton at 24. I hope that they wait to draft a guy like Terry Williams on day three, maybe Xavier Williams. Oh goodness, I'm going to die here. But the guy that Justin Higdon, one of my co-hosts on Draft Savages, always talks about is another big nose tackle is slipping my mind. But those guys are kind of the next tier of players, if you will. And for me, I'm not a huge Danny Shelton guy. He's basically Dan Williams again, and I don't see a point in redrafting Dan Williams if you didn't want to pay Dan Williams. That's just my opinion. Other people may feel differently, and that's completely okay. But I just don't want to see that, you know, same thing again. And then the other, and then Eddie Goldman, I'm not a huge fan of Eddie Goldman. I mean, he's going to end up probably being like in the top 35 players in my draft rankings, just because that's kind of how this draft class is. But I mean, if you're talking on day one, I really hope they don't take a nose tackle, especially with what they did in the offseason.
And well, in my case, I really wouldn't surprise me if they draft a nose tackle at all. And I wouldn't be surprised if they went round one or at any point, because they have a guy in Peters who at least what they're now, that he's a three down guy, that he's going to start off at nose tackle and then slide over for passing downs. However, the nose tackle they're kind of count on is Alameda Tamu. And as we know, he had the weight issues last year that finally came out. He ate himself out of a job, is what Arian said. And I don't know if they're going to count on him. So drafting a guy at some point, or maybe bringing in an undrafted guy, I think it pushes the pressure on Tamu to perform, and it might just squeeze him off the roster, because it sounds almost the way that Bruce Arians talks. He's found his way into that doghouse that Ryan Williams was in, that we think maybe Jonathan Cooper was in. So it wouldn't surprise me at all. Let's look at what position. Let's go along to defensive end. I actually think that's going to be the position they are second least likely to draft, simply because of the players they have. And then we got Calais Campbell. He's not going anywhere. They got Ed Stinson they drafted a year ago. They got, well, granted, they do have some shorter-term guys. So you've got Shaughnessy for one more year. You've got Frosty Rucker for one more year. You've got Corey Redding for 2 years, Corey Peters for three. But you want to add depth there. And the future of Kareem Martin, we're really unsure about. Is he going to be defensive end? Is he going to be an outside linebacker? Or is he going to be both? But I think that unless they come across a guy they really like, and I could even say like an Eric Armstead in the first round, I don't see them necessarily going that direction in the draft.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard it, but I said a little bit about this, and I said that, you know, an Armstead is in play just because he is that athlete, the big, long, fast athlete that Arian's talked about. But for me, a lot of it has to do with whether or not they can find a guy that's flexible. So maybe a guy that can play five technique and, you know, play the nose tackle a little bit, a la Corey Peters. So they have kind of similar talent on the roster. And then, or a guy like Preston Smith that we've talked about that maybe isn't a pure 3-4 outside linebacker that can play, you know, in that five technique, or, you know, maybe even like a seven technique, depending on what they want to do and move around a little bit. But yeah, as far as like a Ed Stinson type, I don't see that happening again, but I could see somebody that's flexible position wise. I mean, like Eddie Goldman to me would be flexible position wise. I think I don't think he'd do it well, but I think he'd be flexible position wise. And then I think a guy like, you know, Armstead is such a freak athlete that a lot of people are going to like what he brings and offers. I hope that's not the 24th pick, but it also wouldn't shock me the way that this roster is constructed and how few holes there are, but how little options there probably will be at 24 to fill the holes that they do have.
Let's talk edge. You feel that they're, I think so too. If you had to put a percentage, what percentage likeliness do you see the Cardinals going with an edge player, like outside linebacker, guy that could go between the two positions? I'd say 80% sure, unless they just happen to be in a position where the guy doesn't land. I mean, no one they like ends up on their where they pick.
I mean, unless they are going against their types that they've sought before, and or they don't like the health report of, you know, the guy you talked about earlier. I don't know how to pronounce his name, so I just call him Diggy. But, you know, Diggy from UCLA, or, you know, Preston Smith, like I said, unless they just don't like them as prospects, I think those are the guys that are going to kind of be in play there at 24. You know, people are going to be like, oh, that's going to be a reach. But you know what? I mean, go back and look at draft boards, and Deion Buchanan was a reach to a lot of people based on where he was ranked on these big boards. And so I don't see why all of a sudden now we're like, oh, we're, you know, Jonathan Cooper was a reach. Hell, I mean, they drafted a guard at 7. And he wasn't even the top guard on, I think, like 90% of big boards. So you look at it, the Cardinals have their board. You know, they have a board that it seems like leans towards need with ability, you know, obviously in play there, but and they have a type, and like we've talked about before, Diggy, Preston Smith, you know, Dante Fowler, I don't think he's going to be there, but those guys all fit that bigger body. Obviously Bud Dupree, that bigger body outside linebacker / edge player that they covet.
Yeah, and I really see, which is kind of interesting. I did the SB Nation writer blog, the blogger mock, and with the first pick, I went with Preston Smith, which really got a tepid response at best. In fact, of the overall, the national poll that for SB Nation, I got the lowest grade out of every single first round pick for my pick. A real solid C pick, even for the community as well. And I keep thinking back, because when I did the same blogger mock a year ago, I went Coney Ealy in the first round. And you know who I managed to pick up in the second round with the Cardinals pick? Deion Buchanan. And yet the Cardinals for real really drafted him in the first round. And when it comes to all those national, the big name analysts, Deion Buchanan, I heard, and it was by one player, it was on the NFL Network, and it was a former safety. It was the only time I ever heard Deion Buchanan's name mentioned as a possible first round pick, and that was the actual pick. And so I went into this blogger mock kind of taking some of the trends, the types of players they want, using your rankings as well, just kind of the skill set that Preston Smith has, the athleticism. And I like the comparison. Now, we're going to talk about a little bit more, but I was really surprised just the meh Like, that was definitely a reach, even by Dan Kadar himself. Admitted, said that was probably a reach, but the logic was sound based on, well, you could have gone with a corner early, but the corner class is deeper and you can get quality talent in round two, round three, as opposed to, you know, the decent guys you're going to get off the edge, especially the guys the Cardinals like to have size wise. They dry up in a hurry.
Yeah, they do. And so I think one of the things that I was heading towards when you came back on was you have to get the prototypical, you know, Vic Beasley, Randy Gregory, even Shane Ray out of your mind, and you have to open up your mind to the Pernell McPhees and the Mike Neals and those, you know, types of players that do a little bit more and maybe won't have the potential to be, you know, 14, 15 sack guys, but they'll be an eight to 10 sack player every year for, you know, 5-6 years before they move on and get a, you know, possibly a big payday somewhere else. And that's, I feel like what the Cardinals are building towards is drafting well and using these guys in spots and not necessarily trying to pigeonhole themselves into, oh, well, we have to have an edge player that's this size or, you know, and or, you know, just rushes the passer. So we're going to go ahead and pick Eli Harold at 24, even though he offers nothing in the run game and really doesn't have any pass rushing moves. But you know what? He looks like an outside linebacker and he runs like an outside linebacker. So that's what we're going to do.
Well, and even if you look at when they went after Brian Arakpo, or allegedly went after Brian Arakpo, he stands 6'4", 257. So he's on the smaller size of what, but he's built like Sam Acho. In terms of build, look at the inside linebackers. It seemed to me early on, at least early in the mock draft season, I think this is before free agency, that was almost the consensus pick for everyone, is that first round the Cardinals are going to go inside linebacker. I think it's likely. Based on what I know about this class of inside linebackers, of players that you think might actually be full-time into packed side of players, they have to go round two or sort of bust, and which makes me think we're kind of at a 50-50 proposition about it's going to come down to if they take an edge player in round one, in round two, it's either going to be inside linebacker or corner, in my opinion.
You know, and it really depends. We talked about this on the podcast actually last week, on the Draft Savages podcast that I posted on Revenge of the Birds. And the conversation was, you know, Eric Kendricks is getting a lot of pub from a few people. Josh Norris is kind of the main guy. And when you look at what Kendricks offers, it's something the Cardinals lack, and that's a cover linebacker. But my question is, what does he do outside of coverage line, you know, as a cover linebacker? And if he is a coverage linebacker, what is that worth? Because we saw, and Justin Higdon, one of my co-hosts, brought up Christian Kirksey from the Cleveland Browns last year. He went in round three. Obviously, the Browns run a 34 defense, and they drafted Kirksey to kind of be that coverage linebacker that they needed in nickel and dime situations, and he went in round three. Is Kendricks a better player? Yeah, probably a little bit right now, but how much more? I mean, are you talking early round two, or is he going to be there at pick 55 or whatever it is that the Cardinals pick? I think he would be, and I think that's a pick that you could see making. I worry when you look at what the Cardinals have done at inside linebacker in the draft lately. You know, Kevin Minter was the run-stopping linebacker, and then he just never could really do anything else. So then it was like, okay, well, we can't have you on the field and in the you know, pass-happy NFL. And so what happens if when they get Eric Kendricks, he's really good, you know, for 10 games, but then in those six division games in the run heavy NFC West, how does that work? I don't know. It's just those are the questions I think you need to ask. And that's why I like the extra time, because that's something you can study. But, you know, I think the inside linebacker's position is something they would like to address. A name that we haven't mentioned, Benardrick McKinney, is a guy
We're going to bring that up in just – I want to go to the Richard. Then we're going to go position by – we're going to talk about okay. best players. He did this last time too, which is exactly what happened. Cornerback, I think it is almost 100% certain they're going to draft a cornerback, and I think they'd be silly not to, considering their corner situation when both Jerrod Powers is a free agent after this year. And Justin Bethel, who is yet to prove himself as a cornerback, is also going to be a free agent after this year. Beyond that, you've got a whole bunch of pretty much, outside of Patrick Peterson, undrafted guys. So I think it's a safe bet to say 100% they're going to draft a corner.
Yeah, and this is a draft where I said it earlier, I think there's going to be a run on corners in the first. I think you're going to see Marcus Peters, Trey Waynes, please don't come to the Cardinals, Kevin Johnson, and then maybe a surprise guy come in the first, and then there's going to be a little bit of a gap. And then I think in the middle or definitely in the third round, you're going to see a big run on cornerbacks, and that's going to be the sweet spot to find a corner that can, you know, be a potential starting corner, but can come in and, you know, sit behind Jerrod Powers a little bit, and hopefully for the Cardinals' sake push Jerrod Powers and then work into that. But I think you're right. It in this draft, this is a really good draft in rounds 2, 3, and 4, in my opinion, to find a cornerback. And I think that's what you'll see the Cardinals do.
Safety position. Would you say that it would be a surprise at all if, or even let's say an upset, if the Cardinals drafted a safety this year?
No. And the reason why is something that we talked about with the edge player position. I think if they could get another, a bigger version of Tyrann Mathieu, a guy that can play nickel or dime corner and then rotate back to safety at times if needed. I think they would like, you know, always to have versatility, you know, in the NFL is so important, especially with, as we saw last year, the amount of injuries that happen. So if you can have the versatility to have a guy that can do multiple things on your roster, it just frees you up to have more, you know, quarterbacks when the end of the season comes along and you're down to your fourth stringer or something of that nature. So versatility is king. So I wouldn't put it at a high percentage where they draft a pure safety, like a Landon Collins. I think that's probably like at a 2%. I don't think you ever say zero in the draft at all, but I think that's at like a 2 to 5%. Whereas I think a versatile defensive back, you know, quote unquote, I think that's in the, you know, the 50%, you know, that's a 50-50 proposition.
For me, there is a, while they are deep at safety right now, 1 year from now, they might not be. Rashad Johnson is a free agent. Tony Jefferson will be a restricted free agent. Now, hopefully Tyrann Mathieu comes back healthy and plays more like his rookie year. And that Dion Buchanan can develop, but then you're left with, you've got your starters. You have no depth behind now. Granted, they'll control Tony Jefferson, and I wouldn't be surprised if this year Jefferson's playing time gets cut down significantly with the, hopefully the development of Buchanan, because that's really what the Cardinals kind of need. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I don't know if they plan on bringing Rashad Johnson back after this next year. And the truth is, if he continues to play at anywhere near the level he did a year ago, he's going to get paid, because they got him on a really, really cheap deal when he was a free agent the first time. He developed into a couple of missed tackles here and there, but there are few players that are smarter on the field. He is their defensive leader. There are tons of teams that would pay good money for a guy like Rashad Johnson. He's a guy you can win with in the backfield as well. So, say another year from now, and they went from having a very stacked safety depth chart to having solid starters with nothing behind him, it wouldn't surprise me to see them later in the draft to pick up a guy like kind of your Justin Bethel type player, where he's going to be an impact special teams player with upside at safety. You there, Seth?
Oh, yeah, I forgot I'd mute.
So, no, did I disappear again?
No. And we'll get into guys, like you said, later, but there's a guy locally that fits that to the T, except he's going to go on, like, round two, and he's really kind of a fourth-round talent. So, I hope it doesn't happen, but you never know.
So let's start talking about those positions. We'll start with the edge. You already kind of set the table a bit. Who are the best and your favorite players on the edge? Who fits the Cardinals the best in terms of what we've seen, and who might be some sleepers? You've talked about, you know, your favorite guy, Vic Beasley. I think if, you know, that sort of rumor, I can't even call it a rumor because it was a random Twitter account that looked somewhat official, but never responded. I've never seen it anywhere else, that a phone call was made to the Texans. If Vic Beasley were to fall, I think there's a chance in heck that Beasley's going to get anywhere near. But I could see that's the type of player the Cardinals would trade up to. You already talked about the Cardinals really kind of like their outside linebackers to be big because they have to be stout against the run. So they get guys who are built like Matt Shaughnessy. They signed him initially to be an outside linebacker, even though he'd played defensive end. He's big, 285 pounds. You have John Abraham was big. He played a lot of 4-3 end in his career. So they're bigger guys. And while it would have been fantastic to get a guy like Von Miller a few years back, in terms of what the Cardinals like to do, at least with Todd Bowles, we'll wait and see with James Betcher, that slight, you know, super, super speedy guy might not be what they want there. And so they see that you pointed out Mike Neal, Pernell McPhee, which are targets that they have, or even Brian Arakpo, who's on the bigger side. You look at other guys and you think Harold might be a little slight, or even talk about Randy Gregory, who, you know, is kind of falling down draft boards. The Cardinals bring him in to do a little homework. He seems a bit slight for what they want to do. Not saying that they wouldn't do it, because they've really never had that sort of player. So you might just add that to see what happens, especially if you can throw him out there on passing downs and have him just fly by a tackle or two.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think, like I said, this draft has tiers of talent for me. The first tier is, you know, Beasley, Dupree, and Gregory. Those are the guys that you want at any cost. I'm not, like you said, Gregory and Beasley, they're a little smaller, so maybe they don't fit, you know, what Betcher wants to do. But like you also said, maybe they just have never had a chance to draft anybody that they liked. So that's why, you know, that's why that hasn't happened yet. The next tier for me is Preston Smith, Owamagbe Odigizuwa, or Diggy as I call him, from UCLA, and Dante Fowler. Two guys in Smith and Diggy that are kind of big freak athletes. And Dante Fowler, while not a freak athlete, he's a guy that I think he's the safest outside of Beasley of all of these players that I'm going to talk about. So, you know, he's one of those guys, like, he's going to come in and have 6 sacks every season for, you know, the next 10 years. And so is that a bad thing? No. Is that a guy you pick at 24? Well, maybe for the Cardinals it is. But I don't know if he's ever going to be a guy that goes for, you know, 15 plus sacks, but he's also a guy that's going to produce year in and year out and be a steady presence on a good defense. At least in my
opinion. And be able to do more than just rush the passer. The one thing that kind of makes me cringe a little bit is Diggy's comparison. I think it was on NFL.com's draft profile. And they have his comparable player is Sam Acho. Now, Sam Acho, his rookie year was really disruptive. But Sam Acho turned out to mean, as a fourth rounder, he's a good guy to have on your team. He's kind of okay at everything. Perfect in the locker room, great on special teams, but in terms of what you want from your outside linebacker, it's just just a tier below. And you know, that's the one thing in terms of skill set that you think you have to project, obviously, a little bit more from a guy at the top of the draft. But you think about taking a guy 24, you're comparing to a guy who was a fourth round that you were gladly letting to go out of town. The only thing that makes me cringe about that, the comparison that you made with, I don't know if you put it out there publicly, if it was just in conversations with me that we've had, because Revenge of the Birds listeners, we do have, you know, Seth and I, we do tend to talk back and forth about things that, football and draft related that we don't necessarily put on the show, but Seth kind of sold me on this guy Preston Smith, and I looked a little bit deeper into his body type, his skill set as a very good athlete compared to Justin Tuck. Now, as we saw with the world champion Giants a couple of times, who wouldn't want a Justin Tuck time player on their team? I wouldn't see any problem with that at all. He's a captain, and so he fits to me. He looks like almost a perfect pick for the Cardinals. If not at 24, if they trade back a few picks, I just don't think he's going to be around come, you know, pick number 54.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that people get caught up on when it in terms of edge players is that whole edge thing. Sorry, I had to cough. They don't have to rush the passer from the edge. They can be edge players in the base and kick inside and be able to create pressure at different positions. And that's kind of what Justin Tuck did. It's not like he was a pure 4-3 outside or defensive end who just, you know, pinned his ear back and went. He was the guy, if you go back and watch the Super Bowl against the Patriots, he's the guy that kicks into defensive tackle and is the guy causing all the disruption. You know, when the Giants beat the Patriots. He may not be a guy that comes in and, you know, does all the fancy stuff off the edge, but he's a guy that you can move around and be versatile with. For me, the Sam Acho comp for Odigizuwa makes, like, zero sense at all. And the reason is because he's way more athletic than Acho was, just way more athletic. So if he's Sam Acho plus athleticism, I think that was kind of the whole thing with Acho is that he wasn't very athletic. So,
well, then that's the case. Then, yeah, that makes him a pretty good pick. So he's like, you know, Alex. I guess it would be kind of sort of mixing the athleticism of Alex Okafor with the overall intelligence of Acho.
Yeah. Type of thing. And that's the thing with
that's
him.
That's the guy you wouldn't mind.
Yeah. And a comparison that we've made on the Savages show before is that he's kind of like Brian Arakpo, healthy Brian Arakpo. So, you know, but he also has the same type of different medical issues, but he has the same type of medical red flags where he's had some hip issues. I know he's had hip, I'm pretty sure he's had hip surgery. So, you know, that's a concern. That's a valid concern to have, especially when you're going to invest 24 into that. So the next tier of guys are guys that, like, if they fell to 55 or wherever they pick in the second round, I would be cool with. I know Shane Ray is not going to, but I don't like him that much as a player. So Eli Harrell, Daniel Hunter, Nate Orchard. And a guy that I was put on to late, and I admit that I had never seen or watched before, was Marcus Rush out of Michigan State. And he's a guy that I recommend everybody go check out. Justice Mosqueda brought him to my attention. He's really, really athletic. And so he just didn't get a ton of credit because of Shalit Calhoun, the other, like, defensive end product at Michigan State. So, you know, if he's there, you know, in round three, the thing is, and this is something that I've written about and I know you've touched on before, getting a impact pass rusher outside of, like, the top 12 is really, really hard. So they're few and far between after the top 12, and the percentages just go down every round. It's kind of like quarterback at this point. Like if teams are passing on them and you're getting a guy at 24, it's probably because he does something other than rush the passer best. And so you have to have the creativity and ability to see past his flaws in order to make him, an impactful player. That's why, like I said, Preston Smith, Diggy, those guys at 24 make the most sense to me.
Let's talk the inside linebacker. Now, I once forgot to ask, are there any late round sleepers that you kind of like, at least? Now, obviously, in terms of complete player, the guys that are going to get drafted late off the edge are more projects. They come from small schools, or at best, typically are going to be special teams contributors who can, fill in. I guess you'd make it kind of like a Marcus Bernard type player. Is there anyone late in the draft who maybe could have any sort of impact at all? I've heard some people, Kyle Emanuel has come up a couple of times. There was a kid, I can't remember his name, out of North Dakota State. If that's the same guy, I can't remember off the top of my head. But are there any pass rushing sleepers that you might be able to find late?
Yeah, I'd like Davis Tull out of Tennessee Chattanooga. He's an interesting guy. We talked about him on the podcast the other day. The one issue you have with him is he's kind of weirdly built to be an outside linebacker pass rusher. A guy that was getting first round talk, and now there's been reports that teams have taken him completely off their boards, is Haloi Kakaha out of
Washington.
Yeah. And it sounds like he might be one of those guys that kind of falls, because he has issues with his knees basically being made out of paper mache, which I don't think it's good in the NFL. So So I think he's a guy that, if he's there, where did they get a comp pick? Seven. So, they trade up in the fourth round, like they did, or was it the fourth round, whatever round it was a couple years ago, where they gave up a six or seven, to move up a little bit. I could see something like that. Outside of that, Marcus Rush depends on where he goes. If he's a day three guy, I'm like totally interested in him based off what Justice is. If you go to Justice's YouTube page and he does like a breakdown of Marcus, and it's a really good breakdown of the player and what he could bring. So, those are the guys. I'm trying to look up the guy from North Dakota State that you were talking about that I watched the other day, and he's not bad. It's just, you have a lot of, you basically, outside of quarterback, the one position everybody's trying to find is a pass rusher, right? So it's basically, the other brass ring that everybody's trying to grab, and it's really hard to find.
Let's look at the inside linebackers. Now, you've kind of talked, there's some guys at the top of the draft. Mike Mayock, on his conference call right before the combine, pretty much said, when it comes to that, all the best one, they're all second, third, they're day two guys. None of these guys, the Garrett Kendrick, the Benardrick McKinney, the Paul Dawson, that kind of, Denzel Perryman, all of those guys should be round two, round three. The problem is, they might all be, because it could start going off the board at the end of the first, and then within about a third of a round, two thirds of a round, all those guys could come off the board. You mentioned Kendrick's kind of being more a coverage guy. I've seen Perryman kind of compared more to a Kevin Minter, if you want a Kevin Minter type player, see what Kevin Minter can do when he's healthy. Since last year, he played all season with the pec injury and a harness. So who knows how much that affected him? Or do you take a guy like McKinney? Where do you think McKinney fits in? is he a guy that would fit with what the Cardinals like to do? Because when you talk about size and ability, he's got all of it.
Yeah, he's a guy that you have to figure out how to get him comfortable using his athleticism on the field. He doesn't look as athletic as he tested when he's playing, and that's, you know, always a concern.
Is he a slow reactor? Is that a slow decision maker on the field?
Yeah, and that's what it looked like out there. And that's one of the kind of things that people are concerned about with him, is that he's not a fast thinker and that he's going to struggle, in the reaction type thing. And so that is a concern, and that's definitely something, you know, we've talked about on our podcast before. And, I hate making comparisons like this, because what people have to understand about like player comps for me is like there's a high end and then there's a low end, and typically the player lands somewhere in that, you know, that 40-60% middle ground.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, his high end comp is Carlos Dansby. So he could be a really, really good player, but he has to figure it out like Dansby did. And where did the Cardinals draft Dansby? They drafted him in the second round. That's going to be, I follow a lot of Patriots guys because I get along with them despite the fact that they win all the time and they're obnoxious jerks about it. But one of the guys they've talked about at 32 a lot is Bednarik McKinnie. They're like, that's just seems like a Patriots type pick, you know, a lanky athletic linebacker who, is probably a day two guy, and the Patriots will just draft him at the end of round one and kind of be like,
that's,
well,
basically,
you'll
I mean, really it is the last pick of the first round. Really, yeah. Is a second round pick, so it doesn't really matter.
Yep, and so that's what it's going to have to be. You have to see where he's at. I prefer McKinnie. Kind of peel back the curtain a little bit on my inside linebacker rankings that should be out in the next day or two, hopefully. The problem is there's just not that many good ones in this class, so that poses the biggest issue. But McKinnie's my number one linebacker in this class, and that's kind of out of default. Like, I don't think he's great by any means. I just think he's good. And so what that does is, you know, where do you go from there? Number two for me is Shaq Thompson, a guy that he's basically Deion Buchanan. So what's the difference? Other than obviously he's an actual inside linebacker, but then I have Eric Kendricks. I think, like I said earlier, Kendricks' ability in coverage makes him a really, really good prospect, and so you look at that and you're like, okay, well, I can get behind a guy like Eric Kendricks in round two or three because he fits a need that the Cardinals really have, and that's somebody that can cover in or drop into coverage and consistently win in coverage situations. From there, you know, it's kind of a mishmash of players and whether or not you think they transition or not. But I'll say this. I don't think they can draft Paul Dawson. The one guy that I'm really – yeah. And not even just because of how unathletic he was, but I think that you have to be concerned with his off-the-field stuff from TCU. Can they afford to take that chance again, you know, type thing?
Right, and there's definitely something about TCU. They've got a culture of stuff that you don't necessarily, well, regardless of the right, it doesn't work with the NFL. They've had kind of a slightly off color, off the field type stuff. Darrell Washington had issues in Texas. There were some talk at the time. It worked out for a while, and then those issues did, you know, come back to bite him and the Cardinals in the butt. So you hate to have, when you have a Darrell Washington, to draft a Darrell Washington clone who might not be as athletic as Washington is.
Yeah. I think a guy, two guys to watch. So Kendricks is one guy to watch. I don't know how to pronounce his first name. I think it's Steven, but it might be Stephon Anthony out of Clemson. Another lankier linebacker. He's 6'3" and 243. And he plays really, really athletic. So he's a guy that I could see, you know, in that round two, at 50. Whatever.
And the Cardinals like the Clemson program. They've really kind of been going the well a little bit lately. They got Andre Ellington, Teron Brown, Chandler Catanzaro. They've got another. Right now, I think they've got five Clemson guys on their roster. A couple of them probably won't make the team, but Steve Keim likes the Clemson program.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's a guy that I think could be in play. Obviously, Eric Kendricks, like we talked about earlier. There's not a huge disparity for me between Anthony and Kendricks. And then another guy just to watch is Hayes Pollard out of USC. He's a little smaller. That's the one concern. And everybody's going to remember him from the guy that forgot to go knock down the ball in the Jail Mary. So Cardinals fans that are ASU fans might be like, what? We don't want that guy. But you know what? He's a move linebacker who, I don't know if he'll ever be a three down linebacker, but you know, he's kind of the anti Kevin Minter. So yeah, you know, but that's how I would rank
about
him.
This Baylor's Bryce Hager. He's a guy I ran across in one of the mock draft simulations I did. Look at the numbers. He's a little undersized, 6'1", 234, to really be an every down guy. I mean, Washington was small. Washington was undersized, but he was so fast. But he measures fast. He's got a 4.6 40. As a late round guy, fifth, sixth round guy, is he a guy perhaps where you talk about Kendricks as kind of being your one trick pony, or you're more of your coverage linebacker? You don't necessarily want to spend a round two pick on it. If you, do you know much about Hager, or is that the type of guy you want to grab as a coverage linebacker late in the draft where you got, they do want to add speed and he does add that.
You know, and Hager's a guy that my buddy Justin, that does the show with me, absolutely loves. So I think I'm trying to find the text. Yeah. I think he has Hager ranked third out of all his linebackers. So Justin's a really smart dude. I should say off-ball linebacker. So, you know, he's got McKinney, Kendricks, and Hager. So, yeah, I mean, he told me about him. I've watched him play, I think, one game. You definitely see he's kind of like Hayes Pollard to me in the same vein, where he does a lot of stuff in space. And he's not necessarily a guy that you are going to be like, hey, go play, you know, in the middle
he'd be Dan Buchanan is what he'd be. He would be an actual linebacker playing that dollar linebacker position.
Yes, exactly. He'd be, you know, I think Pollard, Hager, and there was one other one. Hold on, I'm looking up. He sent me this text a long time ago, so I got to find these texts. Ben Henney out of Kansas. Where do you go? Trying to find my notes on him. Sorry. Another kind of small guy. Another small guy that if you go look at the combine performances, and that's why all these guys hit in Justin's metrics. He killed it in the three cone drill and the short shuttle, and he actually ran a 4.59 40 too. So he's only 6 foot 230. I mean, so he's the same size as Shaq Thompson, and he's more athletic than tested more athletic than Shaq did, but he doesn't play with necessarily the instincts that you would like for a guy that is undersized like that. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, what people think of him. But those are definitely three guys, like you talked about, that have that move ability that can do multiple things.
You sort of talked about some of the nose tackles, so we're not going to bring that up again. It's only sort of a kind of maybe position. Some of the defensive ends, the guys can slide over. Obviously, there are some that are. Would you say is Eric Armstead probably when you're looking at a 3-4 type end that he might be the top of the class in terms of athleticism and upside?
I'm sorry, can you say who you were talking about again?
Eric Armstead.
Oh, Armstead as a defensive end?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing with Armstead. So he tested really well, right? But he doesn't necessarily play that way all the time. He's kind of like Kareem Martin, just more consistent right now than Martin was. For me personally, I like a guy like Malcolm Brown a little better, or Michael Bennett out of Ohio State, who have maybe not as great as athleticism, but
the tape with the disruption.
Yeah, and they're more of a disruptive force consistently. So those are guys. You know, Armstead for me, I like him, and I get the Calais projections because, you know, he's so big, but and he is a quick guy. But I don't know, like, you again, you have to go into that, you know, high end, he's Calais Campbell, but what is his low end? And I'm not sure his low end is NFL starter, and that's what concerns me. Whereas I think like Michael Bennett's low end, or not NFL starter, but like, I don't even know if he's a consistent NFL rotation player. Whereas if you look at like a Michael Bennett or a Malcolm Brown, those are guys that for me go in and are able to consistently win in different ways. And I think for me, that's what you look for. So I would have Armstead, like, if I get around to ranking all these guys and finish grading them, he'll probably end up at like 4 or 5 in my rankings. But he's probably going to go 1 because of the Calais Campbell upside.
I totally skipped over the corners. Top end corners, there's some names right around there. You said they're going to have a run, kind of a run early on and later on. There's an interesting name that actually came up in the Cards Underground podcast, where they have Darren Urban, Kyle Odegaard, and Damian Anderson, their own guys, broadcast guys and media guys. And the name that came up was the uber athletic Byron Jones out of UConn. Hadn't heard of him, but now all of a sudden, you know, I hear his name on the podcast over there on azcardinals.com. And now all of a sudden I see him even mocked as high as the first round. And Anderson even mentioned how the team personnel, the coaching staff, their draft team is really high. And I'm talking even, you know, first round, second round type guy. He's got the height, got the speed, and he just jumps out of the stadium. Is that the sort of guy that would be actually, based on the situation with the cornerback, that might be exactly the perfect type of corner that they could draft?
Yeah, I'm not a huge like Jones fan on tape, so that's kind of my concern. I wrote about Jones before the combine because I had heard from a couple people that he could test out as a freak, and so my question was how much of a quick twitch athlete was he? And obviously he blew up at the combine. So, I mean, he's a freak.
The question is, is he Justin Bethel, who has yet to do anything, or is he, you know, is he more Patrick Peterson?
No, I wouldn't say he's Patrick Peterson. Here's the thing. And he kind of could end up being like Patrick Peterson, where the athleticism overtakes what actually happened on the field, you know? So all of a sudden now he's a good corner. He's probably like a top end corner 2 or a low end corner 1. And now, but he's consistently, you know, getting beat by good wide receivers. And so the question is always, oh, you know, can we upgrade, or, you know, is he somebody you want to pay big money to, blah, blah, blah. So I don't see his upside being Peterson. That's just me. But, you know, I think his measurables definitely like shot him up the charts. When, for me, like, I'd rather have a guy like Eric Rowe out of Utah, who,
yeah, you've thrown that name around a lot.
Yeah, and he's a guy, like, you go look at, like, all the measurables at the combine, again, and he's at the top of like every defensive back list based on like what he did. It's just that Byron Jones was such a freak. Like, I mean, when a guy sets a world record, right, at the combine, that's crazy. So,
What about Jalen Collins, a guy that doesn't have a lot of starting experience, kind of raw? I've seen the comp as perhaps at the high end being sort of an Antonio Cromartie. And we've seen Cromartie's career. He's been up and down. I've seen Collins mocked in the first round. I've seen him mocked it with the Cardinals in the second round. We know the LSU connection. I mean, the Cardinals have kind of picked on, they've kind of used that LSU defense. They got Patrick Peterson. They got Tyrann Mathieu, the mentor. It hasn't worked out quite as well. But is he a guy that you think would fit, especially giving him a year to kind of polish some technique and to get coached before he has to really do anything until year two? Is that a guy? Because he's real polarizing just when I'm seeing in some of the comment threads.
I'm not a Jalen Collins fan, and it's kind of the Byron Jones reason. If you talked about Jones before the combine, most people were like, oh, he's a late day two, early day three guy. For me, Collins on tape is the same thing. Like, he's a round three corner with upside, and I just don't know if you want that at 24. So that's my hesitation with Collins, and that's really it. I mean, he's a really talented athlete. You nailed it. Tall, lanky, fast. So he checks all the desired boxes. Maybe it's a guy that they look at. I just, at 24, I mean, and he could be the pick. Like, I've heard a lot of people say that the Cardinals like him, you know, for what it's worth. So maybe he is the pick. It wouldn't be one of my top like 10 choices for the Cardinals at 24, but he's a guy that I could definitely see. Like you said, he fits checks all the boxes that they want.
Is there anyone that you see as a day three, perhaps a guy that could develop? Again, I'm kind of using the understanding that whoever they pick in the drafted corner isn't going to perhaps play a lot this year, simply because coaching staff absolutely loves Jerod Powers. He's going to be on the field one way or another. I think Tyrann Mathieu is going to be more of an impact player again. He's going to play more slot, I think. And then Bethel's in the mix. So I don't think that this guy that they draft is going to see a lot of field time in year one. Is there anyone day three that might stand out?
Yeah, I think for me, like, the first guy that's super intriguing is Nick Marshall, who played quarterback at Auburn, and so he's really athletic and he hasn't played corner in 3 or 4 years, so I think you want to see him on day three, and you'll be like, okay, I'd be okay with that. Depending on where Roe goes, I'm always intrigued by him, as I've talked about before. I'm trying to remember all the guys over 6 foot. Like, there's not a ton of them in this draft.
No, and that's kind of what that's the trend in the NFL is the taller corners anymore. They think we have Pete Carroll to thank for that.
Yeah, and I think Josh Shaw is a guy, the super awesome
USC
liar,
right?
The liar from USC who got suspended and everything because he was stupid. He's a guy that could be interesting. I don't know if he's athletic enough to play outside all the time. So that's another guy. And then another guy is Damian Swan out of Georgia, another kind of lanky, lean, but he's really tiny. That's the one concern I have with him, is he's only like 185 pounds or something crazy like that at 6 feet tall. So I think those are the guys that you'll see if they stay with that over 6 foot on day three type of mold. But I honestly, like, I could see them going day two and if a guy like PJ Williams falls, or maybe even like a Ronald Darby out of Florida State as well. He's not 6 foot, but he's athletic and lanky. You could see those guys kind of grabbed and snapped up there. Because like you said, it's a spot where they have bodies, but they have only one person on this roster that's a outside corner for the next, 2 years. And I know Peterson's longer than 2 years, but, after next year, Bethel's a free agent, Powers is a free agent. So you're going to have to make a decision. And so, I'm in agreement with you. I think it's a position that they, could be at 24. Kevin Johnson's a guy we haven't even mentioned from Wake Forest, and Marcus Peters. Maybe they like PJ Williams. I don't know. Like the Cardinals aren't, they're adverse to taking risk on risky players. So I don't know what they would actually do, but Marcus Peters is a guy I would love to see. And Kevin Johnson's the other one out of Wake Forest. Trey Waynes, I'd prefer they stay away from, but that's just me. Cause he runs really fast in a straight line, but outside of that, I'm not sure he does a whole lot else. So those are the guys I like better than other, but I'll say this, and this isn't like this should have been the disclaimer that started this conversation to begin with. I don't think you can accurately judge defense or any defensive back in college really successfully. So it makes it really hard because you don't have the footage of how they work. You don't have that all 22 footage to lean on like you do in the NFL, where you can see things like, the coverage that Jerod Powers has had when he's not having the ball thrown at him, and why the Cardinals love him so much. So that's just a disclaimer that maybe it's a cop out. I don't know, but that's the one position I think makes it really hard to do in this whole thing.
Well, we've reached the end of. We kind of glossed over the safety position, but again, we kind of talked about that's not likely going to be a position to focus. You might see something
and
late,
it's a completely awful crop. So it's
so it was good that they took care of their safety position last year. Well, we've come to the end. You've held with it. If you've listened the entire time, thank you so much. Sorry about the technical difficulties early on. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. Tell us, Seth, what you got coming up on the Draft Savages podcast. What you have personally coming up on Revenge of the Birds.
I'm going to have a little piece out tomorrow about the hot conversation about Marcus Mariota falling. If you're the Cardinals, what would you do if he's there at 24? They had that option last year with multiple guys, and they passed twice on two of them with Teddy Bridgewater and Derek Carr. So, what are they going to do? What would you do as a fan if you saw Marcus Mariota sitting there at 24? And then I'm hoping to have my inside linebacker rankings finished. Like I said, it's a tough class because there's not really one complete linebacker for me, in my opinion. So, it's, you're having to pick and choose. And then, I don't even remember the site, which is terrible, but the rivals.com Arizona State site, a buddy of mine runs it, and he asked me to do a couple pieces on the Arizona State kids that are coming out. So that should be out starting Thursday, and there are 4 draft prospects. And then on the Savages,
that's Sun Devil Source, isn't it? Is that Sun Devil Source?
No, it's for Ralph Amundson.
Okay.
I think it's ASUDevils.com.
Yes, yes, that's the one, ASUDevils.com.
Yep, and so, Jamil Douglas, Jalen Strong, Demarius Randall, and I always forget the last one, Marcus Hardinson, who I like the best out of the 5 or 4, which is funny. And then on Savages this week, we're going to talk a little bit about the process of how these guys create their boards and things like that. So it's going to be an interesting topic, and we're going to make fun of a lot of people. So you should definitely listen to that as we continue to try to have fun in this whole entire process, because too many people take it seriously, and it's a lot of fun, and you shouldn't take yourself so seriously.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end. Thanks, Seth, as always, for coming on. You can visit revengeofthebirds.com. Hopefully you already are a member. If you're not, head on over. The best Cardinals content you're going to be able to find in terms of community content and everything else. Great bunch of fans. Yes, it's a selfless. It is my site. I do write most of the stuff on there. But head on over. It's a great community. You won't find a better group of fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio signing off. We'll be back in 2 weeks on the week of the draft. And then we'll kind of go first round. We'll discuss who we want people to pick and who's going to be around. And it should be a good conversation. Seth, thanks for coming on always. This is Dom Jess. That's Seth. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.